morning. Good morning, Chicago. What's going on, Cook County, Illinois, America, those folks who are listening to us around the world? You have tuned in to the hottest political program on this side of heaven. It's Sunday mornings, you all. I'm your host, Brandon Johnson, and I am elated to be with you all this morning. I really am. As always, there is much to dissect, a tremendous amount of work we got to get done. And so it's time to get into it. Good morning, our sister Candace. It's good to have you back in studio.
Good morning, Brandon. How are you?
As I said, I'm elated. I'm very much driven and determined to take full advantage of this moment, to get it right, you all. The fight for economic, social, and racial justice, dismantling structural racism, black, brown, and white folks all over the city of Chicago, being the example for the world, and how America can begin to address it's not just its past sins, but the sins of today, and hopefully leaving a much better and a more substantial mark for posterity. So I don't feel no ways tired, as my ancestors would say.
I gotta say though, Brandon, this has been the last 2 weeks with this Chauvin trial has been America being tired on full display, especially black and brown people in America, especially black people in America breaking down at every age. You saw an 18-year-old black man break down, and then you saw a veteran black man break down on stand at this Chauvin trial. This Chauvin trial, I can't watch it, because even though I get up and I say I'm no ways tired, I look at the people that are testifying, from the police chief all the way down, and say, it's so much more we have to do and so much more work, and that pain is so deep. So, and then as we face our own situation in Chicago, praying for the family of Adam Toledo, but as we face our own situation in Chicago, we have so much work to do.
We do, and that's the part that I am very much resolved and committed to doing, is doing the work. And this is not to suggest and say that if you do get tired, because, of course, it is Sunday mornings. I don't try to preach every single Sunday morning, but I do have it in me. Like, if you provoke me and say amen enough, I just might tune up a little bit.
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to do that much. I'm more of a sophisticated tuner. You know, those proper ones, you know, the new type of preachers, you know what I'm saying? Like, my grandfather, one of the most sophisticated men that I've known, have ever known, you know, comes from a generation where you wore, you know, a suit every day, sophisticated, had the whole rhythmic tradition down. Of course, we were brought up in the churches of God in Christ, so we didn't have a choice but to be a little sophisticated and have the rhythmic tonation of when the spirit begins to get a little bit deeper down in your bones. So, as Jeremiah would say, it's just like fire.
Well,
shut up in your bones.
Uh-huh.
There's an entire segment of our listening audience that has no idea what I'm talking about right now.
I mean,
773-763-9278. But what I'm saying is, and you have tuned into a live broadcast of Sunday Mornings with Brandon Johnson and Candace Castillo. And what I'm getting at is that I'm not saying that we won't get weary. I mean, even the Bible says that young men will faint and even get weary. But those, of course, that wait upon the Lord, their strength shall be renewed. And so that's what you're hearing from me today, is that in the process of waiting, that process is not just simply looking and twiddling of your thumbs. That waiting is the act of service. And that's what I'm committed to. And I know those of you who are listening to this program this morning, you're very much committed to that process as well. That in our waiting, we are serving. We are serving.
Well.
And that's the, I believe, is the reflection that I have today, is that the police brutality and killings have certainly, you know, gripped the hearts of mankind. And in that process, there's a whole bunch of emotion and as you said, pain and struggle, but yet determination that comes out of that, that gripping. And this is why, again, I'm encouraged this morning, sisters and brothers, because I do believe that there is not just a movement afoot, that we are literally on the precipice of actually shifting and transforming how we do government. And what was good for the generation prior is no longer, it wasn't enough then, but it's certainly not acceptable for today.
It's not even what we can sit down and think about. And honestly, I have been looking at a lot of Dr. King's writings when he talks about chaos or community. And even though that was in the 60s, if you read Chaos or Community, it has the foresight and the wherewithal to talk about where we are now. Do we pick our beloved community or do we pick the selfishness of capitalism?
That is a very profound question. And this is why I believe the efforts that we're putting forth, we'll get into the discussion. We obviously are leading you into that. Just be patient with us this morning. That's a, another really good gospel song.
Take a walk with me.
That's a good one. Lord, please be patient with me, right? Folks would say, be patient with me because God is not through with me yet. It's a great axiom just because if you ever, you know, decide to, you know, express your true emotions and you end up cussing somebody out, you just start singing that song.
Or you just say, God is still working on me.
It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? But I think it goes better if you just break out into song, which, by the way, we're not going to break out into song today, but today is Nikos's final sort of episode in this capacity. And just for the record, you know, Nikos, we're going to have somebody in place that's pretty doggone dynamic as well. But I do want to thank Nikos from the bottom of my heart, how good it's been, Candace, working with him. And I promise I won't break out in song. However, Nikos and I, I've already tried to work to contract him out. I want to turn my life into a musical.
Oh, my God. No.
I got your poem that you made. I got the one to pull up the poem.
No.
You remember that?
No. Remember when Nikos couldn't clap on beat?
How about that?
Nikos has come such a long way. He looks up all the gospel music terms. Like, I am so proud of Nikos. Nikos, we have taught you so much.
I am a different person.
You are a different person.
Take that.
I went from Nikos to N-Dog.
I don't know what that means. I don't know if you can give yourself a nickname. I don't know if that's permitted.
Okay, well, we're backtracking.
But the fact that he said that his life has changed, that's a testimony this morning.
That is a testimony.
Now, that is church right there.
No, it's been cool. Yeah, I mean, how long have I been this? Like a year and a half now, maybe 2 years?
Yeah, we're in our second year. Yep.
It's been awesome. I mean, I really do. I think your show is one of the coolest ones that I've been able to work on. And, you know, I appreciate you guys being super. The guys are so easy to work with. Like, I look up songs. I play cool things. Y'all make me laugh. I get to talk here and there.
So, and he learns a few things along the way.
Yes.
Yeah, how about that?
So I mean, y'all are teachers, so I guess that would be. That
no,
would,
he's so. A he's a teacher.
No, we're teachers. You took a class, though, Candace.
Yeah.
And then you decided to do other things.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right, well, he's a teacher. I hope I learned something here.
For sure. 773-766.
Horrible dress techniques.
Listen, there's no judgment in the house of God. Not this one. Not at least not on this Sunday morning's episode.
And, I mean, today is an interesting Sunday morning for me. I gotta say, the one of the best non-ordained preachers I ever heard, we lost this week. Yeah. And that was DMX. Yeah. His life is the vice president of CTU, Stacey Davis Gates, posted about his childhood and how he was perceived as a bad kid and thrown away by the system by the time he was 10 years old. And somebody introduced him to crack by the time he was 14. It took that extra step on how we don't bring those children that need us the most closer. And that goes back to the chaos or community theory. that goes back to, do we choose to reach out that hand? Do we choose to have more counselors or social workers or coaches in our schools to pull them closer? Do we choose to hold police accountable that shoot 13-year-old children? Or do we say, well, he had a gun, therefore he was a bad kid, therefore he deserved it?
Well, this is obviously what we're getting into today, sisters and brothers. And I want you to call in today, 773-763-9278. We're actually up on social media right now. You all were amazing last week. We hit our benchmark for shares. So let's keep that up. Share the broadcast. Throw some comments in there. I do have a big question today that we want to get to. You know, Candace, to the point about, you know, DMX and just the life that he lived and the impact that he had on society. If I can just make another connection here of why it's so important that we invest in building lives versus the investments in destroying and breaking lives. And every time we increase a police budget, every time we put more money into policing inside of our schools than we do for social workers, every time we put more money in incarceration in jails, that's breaking and destroying our communities. That's a willful, negligent, obviously, investment in, you know, the very system that has created the type of chaos that I believe Candace has alluded to, referencing Dr. King's writings. And $5 million a day just in law enforcement.
In
Chicago.
Say that again, because people hear it, and I don't think people hear it. When we have a mayor that says, I'm investing in these community programs to help stop policing, and this great amount of money of $6 million. Wow. When we spend $5 million a day on policing and have one of the lowest clearance rates in the country. How are we spending $25 million in a work week on policing in Chicago with one of the lowest clearance rates? That means something isn't working.
And the city's 2020 budget set aside $153 million for what is so-called legal settlements. In 2018, the city spent approximately $100 million to settle police misconduct cases. And this was not just limited to what happens in the so-called streets. This is also a practice that happens in our schools as well. And, you know, Candace, I just believe that, as I said before, we are in an incredible moment right now to actually do something pretty historic. And we have some dynamic guests today. I'm going to get to our sponsors, too. But in an historic moment, Chicago could be on the verge of creating an elected commission in charge of police. An historic moment is near, where Chicago has the motivation from grassroots organizations, motivation from city council members to bring forces together to create an elected commission in charge of the police. And we have some really dynamic folks who are going to join us today. We're going to take a quick break. But my question that I have for you all is, do we need more civilian oversight of the Chicago Police Department? Do we need it? Do we need more civilian oversight over the Chicago Police Department? We're well over $500 million, well over $500 million in just police settlements alone. And the lack of accountability that continues to be the prevailing paradigm for this city has to be disrupted if we're really going to invest in lives. We got Jasmine Salas, you all, one of the most prolific, dynamic leaders that I know, pushing for real accountability and justice in this city and really globally.
Right.
And she's no stranger to Sunday mornings.
Nope. She's been on a couple of times.
She's been on a couple of times. In fact, I think sometimes she probably drops her phone when I text her.
She probably does. She walks away, but she likes me.
And so that's why you called her this time. Thank you, Jasmine. You're going to hear from Jasmine Salas in a second. We're going to try to get Alderman Sawyer on the phone line as well. But we want you to join us. I got the poll question up, so you got to start engaging, y'all. It's Sunday mornings, WCPT 820 AM Sunday mornings. That's the live studio audience. Let's go, y'all. Let's go to church.
Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Hey, welcome back. Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, America, our worldwide listeners. Thank you to our live studio audience. I think most of them have been vaccinated. I would still encourage folks to wear your masks and keep washing your hands and remember to continue to socially distance yourself because there you go. People just give me random applauses every time I say something. And that's important. I part of my musical will have a regular sort of
back
audience.
To the musical.
And I'm trying to tell you all that I think me having the ability to just live life and then when circumstances come up, instead of the situation like calling for a Zoom or a conference call,
you just want to break out in song.
A musical.
Brandon, mm-hmm. Brandon, can you sing?
I mean, enough.
Okay. All right. Matthew J. Long Jr., call your friend.
So it's WCPT 820 AM where the facts matters is actually Sunday mornings with Brandon Johnson. We are still the hottest political program on this side of the Jordan. And we have some sponsors that have made this show possible. Thank you to the Chicago Federation of Labor. Thank you, of course, to the Cook County College's Teachers Union. A big win for Local 1600 there. Norma Hernandez is ahead there in that trustees race.
Ooh.
Congratulations to those folks. And, of course, we are still supported by the Chicago Teachers Union's Foundation. We are still supported by SEIU, HCII, home health care providers. And we are still supported by the Illinois Federation of Teachers. And then, of course, we are supported by the friends of Brandon Johnson. So thank you. Those friends are some of them are in the studio this morning today, in fact. And I do want you all to continue to like and share the broadcast. Candace, this conversation around policing in Chicago has left us in an enormous amount of turmoil and pain. That the level of torture that black and brown folks have experienced at the hands of the police is real and it's well documented. But we have people who are in leadership positions that are taking on this task. And one of those persons is a regular to our program on Sunday mornings. It's been a while. We're glad to have Jasmine Salas back with us. Hey, Jasmine, welcome back to Sunday mornings.
Hey, Brandon. Hey, Candace. Glad to be back.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. And just for those who may not be familiar, you're a part of an organization and have led a movement that has been, really on the front lines of pushing for more accountability, but really pushing for a transformation. Black folks, brown folks have experienced oppression, and you've been a part of that effort. Just folks who may not be familiar with you, could you just take a couple of minutes just to talk about that organization and just the work to really confront political racial oppression?
Sure. So my name is Jasmine. I am one of the co-chairs of the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, founded it all the way back in 1973 out of the movement to free Angela Davis and all political prisoners. In Chicago, we've been, as you said, Brandon, on the front lines, really fighting for community control of the police as a way to really empower the community to determine who polices our communities and how they're policed. We think this is critical, especially for black and brown communities that are living under a police occupation, to put black and brown people in control, right? Because I think this goes beyond policing. People have the right to control the institutions that govern their lives. So policing, especially for black and brown folks, considering the occupation, it's critical for us to have that oversight.
So I'm going to dig into that a little bit. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jasmine.
That's fine. Go ahead.
No. Please go ahead. So you were saying
Yeah. So we've been fighting for CPAC. A lot of folks know about CPAC, Civilian Police Accountability Council. We've actually shifted campaigns. We've come together with the GAPA Coalition, and so now we are fighting for community control through empowering communities for public safety.
So I want to drill down on that a little bit in terms of just the CPAC and GAPA and the work that was done to bring these very dynamic forces together. But Jasmine, something you said that I think, you know, is worthwhile, I guess, pressing on a little bit. You talked about in your opening statement, civilians, residents having more control and oversight of its government. I want to push on that thread just a little bit because I'm in the midst of a conversation now at the county level, and I won't spoil it just yet, but that there's an initiative that we're going to be working through with the community organizations as well as labor around more accountability. And that accountability really is pushing for residents or civilians, if you will, to have direct access and control and say over the direction of how government should move about. There are some individuals, Jasmine, that have been around for a while, and some of them might even use terms to describe their political ideology as liberal or progressive. And what they've done is they've sort of prided themselves as being transparent. So because we post the information that goes on the wickedness, because we make it, quote, accessible for you to see the inequities, that in and of itself is transparent. And so therefore, that gives the public, quote, control over it. You see where I'm going, Jasmine? That clearly is not good enough for this generation. And so I want you just to dig a little bit deeper on why it's important to have that type of participation, because some people would argue that once you elected Brandon Johnson, that is your sort of so-called public accountability. That's your representative of the first district, right? Or once you elected whomever. You get where I'm going, Jasmine. So we're shifting this in a very dramatic way. Why is the so-called posting and the so-called transparency, sort of liberal, so-called progressive ideology no longer acceptable for this generation?
Well, I think because people are starting to wake up and see the truth. They're starting to see that there are a lot of people who they've elected into office who have claimed that they're going to represent their interests and they're going to fight for them. But once they're in office, they do the exact opposite, right? Like, this is a system, you know, where people are encouraged and, like, given money to uphold the status quo. And the status quo never benefits the people. And so for us, like, and when I say us, I mean people of color, I mean working class people, you know, like, we don't have access to the same rooms and conversations currently, right? Like, we're not even at the table when it comes to making policy choices and, like, you know, other choices that, like, determine what happens in our lives. And these are our lives, you know? And I think about, even just talking about, like, people in government, how many folks have been in office for, like, 30 or 40 years? I mean, I'm talking, especially in Congress, folks who have been there forever. Mm-hmm. And they're so out of touch with what the people need. And the thing is, I don't need somebody to speak on my behalf. I'm fully capable of speaking for myself. Right. And there are a lot of people in this city who are also capable of speaking and articulating what their needs are. And we've been organizing, you know, and yet we know that in order for us to really be heard, we have to be in the room. We have to be the one leading these efforts, because otherwise it's so easy for these politicians to be, you know, kind of lured away from their morals based on money. And I feel like, especially when it comes to policing, man, they don't listen to us for anything. So, like, when we look at all of the attempted reforms that have happened, you know, I'm talking about even all the way back to 2016, you know, Lori Lightfoot, when she led her police task force initiative, they didn't implement any of those things, you know, and now with the consent decree, you know, so many of those recommendations still haven't been implemented. The use of force task force is another example that came up with dozens of recommendations, and CPD only implemented 5 of them. It's a joke. So that's why we need to be directly in positions of power so that we can get stuff done, because when we're not, it's hard for things to get done. We're capable of leading ourselves, and we're going to take back that control and that power.
773-763-9278. That's the voice of Jasmine Salas. A regular on Sunday mornings. She's one of the co-chairs of the Chicago Alliance against racism and political repression. And we're talking about police accountability in the historic moment that we're in right now, where we could potentially, Chicago could have its citizens, its residents, having oversight over policing here in Chicago, Candace. That's a big deal, these forces coming together.
It's a huge deal, and it's good for Chicago, and it's a great example for many cities on how they could do some transformation of policing in their cities. So digging into the ordinance, Jasmine, empowering communities for public safety seems to have a multi-layered system of oversight, which I love. What is the difference between, it seemed to be two different levels, the district councils and the commission level. What are the difference between the commissions and the district council?
Yes. So for those who may be familiar with GAPA's model, it basically maintains GAPA's model with some minor tweaks. So the district councils are basically created in each of our 22 police districts, and they're made up of three people elected by the community. And one person who's elected will go on to serve on a nominating committee that will nominate positions for the commission. And the commission has final say on police policy. The commission is involved in selecting the police superintendent, the COPA chief admin, and police board members. And so when the nominating committee nominates folks for the commission, the mayor has to pick. But the mayor has to pick from the list that is sent to her. So the mayor can't, you know, try to get her friends on the board. The mayor can't try to get her funders on the board. It's people that are only selected by the nominating committee, which is elected by the community, which is something that I really like. I mean, I love that there's so much democracy in this bill. This bill is really the people's ordinance, not just because of the fact that the Alliance and GAPA are leading it, and we're both really grassroots movements, but just the fact that the people just have so much say in this structure.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned that for people to have say. You know, there's always these criticisms of the electorate. You know, not enough folks are engaged, not enough folks are getting informed, not enough folks are showing up. Pulling two major organizations together or ideas together to form this layered and multi-pronged approach towards police accountability and bringing more democracy into the governance structure of our society is actually, you know, not just a testament of our love for our community, but it's really a testament to our belief in a system that, quite frankly, hasn't done right by us, right? You know, no one is necessarily saying, well, I shouldn't say no one. There is the presence of police is something that all of our communities, I think, battle with, right? There's the idea of what people believe police can be and should be. And then there's the reality to many of us who've experienced policing in a far more brutalized fashion. That's just the reality, right?
Right.
You know, Candace, I've shared this before. Jasmine, I've said this multiple times. You know, there was an entire study that was done on black male boys that were born essentially the year that I was born, or right around there. They studied us. And over the course of this study, boys born in 76, 75, 78, somewhere in that area, that one in three of us went to jail. That 7 in 10 of us were incarcerated if we did not graduate from high school. Now, Jasmine, I don't know how many, you know, black men you know who are in their, you know, early 40s, moving into their mid 40s. I'm not going to accept that we just have a greater proclivity towards criminality, right?
That's just not true.
An entire generation, a cohort of individuals, right? There's an intentionality there, right? And so the fact that this system is even still being given the benefit of the doubt speaks to our faith in one another, is what Jasmine, what I'm hearing from you say, and pulling these forces together expresses our love and our faith in one another, that we can hold the system accountable, even if that system is actively working to brutalize us. That, I think that's sometimes the conflict. I know I'm putting you all on the spot, but this is the conflict that many black and brown folks experience, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think definitely, like, again, like I said earlier, like, we know what's up. Like, we have these experiences every day with the police. And so we know that it's not just something in particular with black and brown folks. No, we know that we're being targeted and we're being criminalized. I mean, even as children, you know? And so even though, like, there are contradictions in this movement, you know, I have complete faith that we are capable of driving the boat. We are capable of really leading our communities. And I think, you know, this bill really does that. It gives people a real voice and a real say, you know, as we are trying to navigate this system together and try to make it work for us. And I didn't even talk about the other part of the bill, which is the referendum. I love the whole bill, but the referendum is my favorite part. just because it really gives voters the opportunity to take it a step further, you know? I mean, I think people want more, you know, power. People want a more democratic structure, right? So this referendum would, if passed by the voters in 2022, would allow the commission to determine the police budget, would, you know, give the commission more power, and would create a commission that resembles CPAC, what we've been fighting for, you know, in this city. And so I think it's a really beautiful moment right now. It's a really historic moment that we really have an opportunity to make policing more democratic and make police accountability more democratic.
So, Jasmine, I want to break it all the way down for those that are listening to the show. They are not policy wonks like Brandon and I are. So let's take it back to what we're all witnessing in this country right now, which is the Chauvin trial. It's been said that Chauvin had 19 incidences with a community saying that he had brutalized people before he even got to George Floyd. How would the ECPS have stopped Chauvin before he got to Mr. Floyd?
Well, I think definitely, you know, the ECPS would have taken those claims seriously and would have investigated them. You know, I am not surprised to hear that Derek Chauvin had 19 prior complaints. I don't know how many folks know, but Jason Van Dyke also had about 24 complaints.
Yep.
So this is something that, even though it's happening in another state, is very much reflective of policing in this city. And I think the problem is that there is this blue wall of silence where cops don't rat on each other. They don't snitch on each other, you know, and they will protect other cops and they'll lie, you know, when it comes to investigations. And they'll basically try to prevent an investigation from occurring by not cooperating and not being truthful about what happened. And so I think definitely if we had a structure and a system in this city that actually took that seriously, so when somebody came forward with a complaint and heard the people who were complaining and heard their stories and said, we want to get to the bottom of this and actually take it seriously and investigate, then Chauvin could have been taken off of the streets, you know, when he had the first couple of complaints come forward. It's hard to really say for sure. But I think definitely the problem is that when people complain about the police, nobody takes it seriously.
773-763-9278. Again, the voice that you are hearing from is one of a true champion and leader really globally, is Jasmine Salas, is one of the co-chairs of the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. And she is on live here Sunday mornings with Brandon Johnson. Of course, Candace Castillo, Nikos' Last Day. There's My Musical. Mm-hmm. And this is really what I am looking to achieve in life.
You're looking to achieve losing your mind?
No, that's not what I'm saying. Is like,
you're,
I want,
acting a fool.
No, people breaking into musical in the midst of like provocative situations. Because I think that that actually can help bring people closer together. Could you imagine on the floor debate in the Cook County Board of Commissioners that instead of like just texting someone about how upset I am about another colleague, that this song just broke out? You wouldn't tell me you wouldn't tune into government if this kind of stuff happened.
No, but I think everybody should turn into government anyway, because if you have not been watching city council meetings online, you have been missing out on a good time.
But I can tell you who is not missing out on a good time. Renee Criswell is watching with us. My sister Evelyn is watching. My sister Joy, my cousin Jamie, the folks on social media, thank you for hanging in there with us. Tata Hudson, we're only one share down. What's up with that? 29 people have shared the broadcast. Don't have me lose my mind up in here. Share the broadcast. Do we need more oversight over police department? Not just here in Chicago, but really around the country. It looks like we are on the verge of doing that in the city of Chicago. Jasmine Salas with us, you all. Coming right back, y'all. Sunday mornings, get up.
Because facts matter. You are listening to WCPT 820.
Hey, welcome back, you all, to the hottest political program on this side of the Jordan, 773-763-9278, WCPT 820 AM, where the facts matter. My name is Brandon Johnson, the host of the show. Thank you very much to our live studio audience. Don't forget, you all, in this coming week, there's a lot that's happening, and we have Jasmine Salas on with us discussing this potential historic moment where GAPA and CPAC have connected and combined their ideas to ultimately bring the type of oversight, the democratically controlled oversight by the residents of Chicago over the police department. And thank you again for all of you who are listening to us or watching us. You've helped make this show amazing. Oscar Ortiz has joined us. So good morning to you, Oscar. Brother, you should have been up hours ago. What's going on? Don't you got papers of grade? Quarter's about to end. Oscar is one of the great guys.
You just calling people out.
Lori Torres is on. I know she grading papers. Them serious
teachers. Come on, man.
I know. Y'all shouldn't be working on Sundays anyway.
First of all, yeah. They are taking some self-care time by probably drinking coffee or tea or a mimosa, you know, whatever. And listening to the show. Teachers need self-care, too. And because I know that they are the exemplary teachers that I know they are, mm-hmm. like my son's school, Turner Drew Language Academy, mm-hmm. his grade's been in.
Okay. I just feel like there was a lot of finger action going on
there.
Like you were trying to read
there
me.
There was.
Hey, girl, bye. This is probably good for
there
her.
Was. There was, because, see, you were denigrating the self-care of our teachers.
So this is why politicians don't have community forums. Because you think you're a good elected official, and then Candace shows up to your town hall, and this is like, come on, man.
Alderman Taylor has community forums via Facebook Live and Zoom.
No, I do them too. But
she's having one on the 14th about COVID vaccine, and one on the 24th, which is just a youth one.
Okay, could you stop? Like, I feel like you're just attacking me.
You feel attacked by a finger?
But just the way your hand motion
is coming.
And
see, that goes back into our conversation with policing.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the Chauvin trial, they said people telling Derek Chauvin to stop was attacking him and made him feel uncomfortable. And that's why he had to stay on a man's neck for 9 minutes. So are you saying that you can identify with the police of a finger attacking you?
I think to that point, though, you know, Jasmine, you know, Candace raises an important point, though, in terms of like how police respond to us and why you need this type of democratically controlled structure, right? I'm sure folks are paying attention to social media. There was a lieutenant out of the Army. I believe this was in Virginia. I don't know if I got the state right. It's in Virginia. And he had an encounter with law enforcement. I believe an Afro-Latino brother. I mean, it was pretty horrific watching the interactions. And Jasmine, I know you mentioned earlier, and we'll get into like what's going to happen this week, because I want to get into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts of this ordinance, but what's before the city council this week. But before I do that, Jasmine, the gestures and the experiences, the interactions that we have, black and brown folks, women, men. I mean, our experience and interactions with law enforcement are, in many cases, some of the most traumatic interactions that one could ever have. And that's something that I just, you know, I don't know if, you know, when we move for ordinances, if this type of like engagement or not just analysis, but a real recount of our experiences, if it really plays a part when decisions are being made. It's you know how sometimes it's just difficult to just talk about our melanin and how people interact with us, whether they are a teacher. And let's just be honest that there are challenges that we have within our public school system. There was a report done by the Department of Justice and Department of Education where law enforcement and teachers would see black children sometimes, Jasmine, 4 years older than they really were.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so we have these interactions that have been disturbing and have further not just criminalized our existence, but it has exacerbated the criminal sort of enterprise of the criminal system by targeting us, and our gestures, our movement, our hand motions are seen as threats. And when other people have those gestures and motions, it's seen as nothing, right? They're just so if I could, I know I said a mouthful there, Jasmine, but just, you know, in your work, when you're talking about like dealing with repression and oppression, part of the conversation has to be about the real anecdotal and the scientific data of our interactions with law enforcement. Millions of dollars going into policing in schools, the number of settlements that have happened in this city inside schools because of brutality cases and charges. These interactions have been horrific, Jasmine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So when I first started tabling with the Alliance in 2015, I was stunned because I used to table 63rd and Cottage Grove right under the Green Line. And almost every person who came to the table had a story, or they knew somebody who had been tortured by the police, or they knew somebody who had been attacked or roughed up by a cop. These stories are horrific, and they're so common, unfortunately. I mean, we know about, you know, the big cases. We know about John Birch, but this stuff happens every day in our communities. And it definitely has to be at the center of what we do. You know, in the Alliance, the families and the survivors of torture and abuse at the hands of the police are at the center of our work.
Good.
You know, like, that's why we do so much work fighting to release folks who have been wrongfully convicted. We actually just had a victory last week.
Yep.
With a man named Gerald Reed, who finally, he wasn't fully pardoned by the governor, but I'm blanking on what kind of pardon he received, but he's out of jail right now. He came home on Friday, and just seeing him and his mother, Armenda, hug for the first time in 31 years, was such an incredible moment. And just knowing that, like, he's gone through so much, you know. I don't know if folks here know about the story of Gerald Reed, but he was picked up.
Go for it.
So 31 years ago, he was picked up by a member of John Burge's Midnight Crew, and he was tortured and beaten so badly that a metal rod in his leg broke. And he lived in pain throughout his 31 years in prison because the jails never bothered to repair that leg. So he had a hard time moving. He had a hard time going up the stairs. And he was in an incredible amount of pain. And he finally had surgery, partial surgery, in 2019 and 2018. But the doctor who performed the operation passed away.
Mm.
And so because of that, you know, the rest of his that repair was just in limbo, where the prison, you know, wasn't really prioritizing finding a new doctor to repair it. So even though Gerald had some work done on that leg, he still was in pain. And even when he was, you know, finally out of prison on Friday, he came out in a wheelchair. He couldn't stand up. He had a hard time walking still. 31 years in pain. It's just horrific to think about it. And Gerald is not alone. There are thousands of black and brown people in this city and in this state who have been, like, wronged by the police. You know, every day that somebody who's wrongfully convicted is in torture, is in prison, they're being tortured. The torture wasn't just the night that they were beaten up by the police. The torture is them having to live in prison for a crime they didn't commit and have to be in the system, especially now during COVID, where, you know, there is no standing 6 feet apart in jail. You know, we've heard about prisons who don't even provide soap to the folks who are incarcerated. It's just horrific conditions that people experience.
And so
definitely these stories are at the core of our work, for sure.
And I wanted to lift that up, and as we just move into the last part of the show here and talk about what's being pushed in committee and, you know, what we can do. Those stories are just there's thousands of those, right? And that the encounter with law enforcement is not just the traffic stop or the arrest. It's the brutality of our prison and our jails. And you can't convince me, Jasmine, that if 85% of the folks who are in jail or prison were white men, that the conditions would be would that people would be OK with the treatment or the conditions. And we know this to be true because when Dylann Roof murdered a church session of black parishioners, he was treated. They asked him if he was hungry. Right. And what we have to come to terms with in this city, in this country, and it's what we're pushing at the county level as well. We have to be held to a higher degree and higher standard, that the day of transparency just simply being something that you post online, that's just no longer acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And we should be pushing for more democracy in this country, as bombs, of course, are dropped all over the world to bring about democracy. But when it comes to black liberation in particular, then somehow we find the conservative proclivities that this country is far more accustomed to. You know, we're talking about 2,354 misconduct complaints just in Chicago Public Schools.
Say that one more time.
I got you, Candace, because we preach in this Sunday.
Well,
she said one more time. Almost 2,400 misconduct complaints alone just from babies inside of school buildings, where the CPD settlements just in the public schools are well over $2 million, right? And we're fighting for economic opportunities and justice for neighborhoods that have been deprived for generations. And it's well past time that we actually put forth a real plan where we move money away from this carceral system that has brutalized and terrorized black and brown folks for too long and move it towards building lives. And so, Candace, Jasmine is a part of that work. And what's happening this week, Jasmine, this is being brought before a committee vote, and you all have, you got city council support. Am I reading that right, Jasmine?
Yeah, so far things are looking great. I mean, we still have work to do, but I'm feeling so inspired and positive. We just had two endorsements from the Latino caucus and the Progressive caucus that came out end of last week. So that, for us, is a great sign. We are still working on other caucuses. We're definitely meeting with Alder still. But this week is the official launch of the campaign. You know, now we're in campaign mode. And now, you know, even just yesterday, we had folks out canvassing for ECPS. We had folks in our office phone banking for ECPS. We really need to make sure that we're engaging the community to fight for this ordinance. Because I believe in people power, and I know people power is how you get things done. And so that's why we've been launching this campaign to really, at a grassroots level, mobilize people to support this ordinance. We're also having a rally on the day of the April City Council meeting on the 21st. It's going to be a car caravan and a rally. It's going to be downtown at 9 a.m. To really continue that pressure. You know, people talk about this one moment where, over the summer, where we had a CPAC rally outside of a city council meeting, and there was one moment during the Zoom session of the meeting where you could hear people chanting, CPAC, 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 And Lori Lightfoot looks so uncomfortable. And so we want to make her uncomfortable. We want to let the others know that we are not playing, that we need you to pass ECPS now.
So other than showing up to the rally on the 21st, should people be calling their alder people, even if they're supportive, should people be calling their alder persons and say, hey, I support this?
Oh, absolutely. Call them and also call Taliaferro. Taliaferro is the chair of the Public Safety Committee. He has the power to put ECPS up for a vote in that committee. So call your alder person and call Taliaferro as well, Alderman Chris Taliaferro. We're trying to pressure definitely the whole entire city council on this, though.
And where can people find more information? And we can put it in the chat, too. Folks are asking for that. Where can we find more information about the ordinance? Is there a link to the city clerk's website? Or is there a link from one of our websites from this collaboration that we can throw on the link, Jasmine?
Yeah, if you go to caarpr.org, that's our website. We have actually a tab devoted to ECPS, and it has everything. It has a copy of the bill. It has a summary of what's in it. We got graphics, and we have some links at the bottom to help folks contact their elected officials. So if you don't know who your alder person is, or if you want to think about, let's say you've already called them and you want to think about taking further action, we got you. All of that is available on our website, aarpr.org.
Yeah, I'm going to drop that in there. Candace or I will drop that in there right now. You got a lot of folks on social media who appreciate you. You know you got a big fan in Tara Stamps. I know you've done some work with her, and appreciate all the folks who are hanging out with us on social media. You know, look, you know, time is up. Jasmine, I want to thank you so much. Jasmine Salas from the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, Democratic Civilian Control of Chicago Police. This historic moment has been brought to you by the people. Jasmine, we'll do it again soon, okay? I promise. Thank you so much.
Definitely, because the last time you contacted me, I was in Cuba.
I remember that.
So I couldn't be on the show.
I remember that.
But now we're in a pandemic. I'm not going anywhere. So definitely hit me up.
Well.
Right. Well, some of us are not going anywhere. I appreciate you being responsible, Jasmine. No shade on anybody else who's getting on planes. I'm just saying, y'all, cool off for a minute.
Hey, they said if you fully vaccinated.
Yes, I know you are. But anyhow, so Jasmine, thank you. I know you were in Cuba, and I'm glad that you're home and safe and healthy. And we'll talk to you again soon, I promise you. I can't believe time is up, you all. Nico's last day here of this show. We got Dylan that's going to be hanging out with us on Sundays. Congratulations to Nico's and his promotion, man. It's been a joy working with you, brother.
It's like passing the torch.
There you go.
The next one.
I want to thank all of our sponsors, of course. I think we said CFL, CCCTU, 1600, SEIU, ATII, IFT, Chicago Teachers Union Foundation, and of course, the Friends of Brandon Johnson. Nikos and Dylan for holding it down today. 29 shares, you all. We need one more share. What's wrong with y'all? The Lord says the same, of course. We'll be here if it's Sunday. And do me a big favor, WCPT 820M with the Facts Matter. We are the hottest political program on this side of heaven. So do us a big favor and remain faithful. God bless you. Love you. Peace.